Changing minds one thought at a time. Greetings, 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 everyone, and welcome to the Motivate Social Podcast, where we're bringing you people who are changing the world via social media. But before we get started, I have to introduce my lovely, lovely co-host, Vanessa Canterbury. How art thou?
I am great. How are you?
I am fabulous, fabulous. So I am super excited about our guest tonight. Tell them who we have today.
Oh, I am so honored to be able to introduce this amazing person who I've connected with. And I'm just truly, truly blessed to be able to learn more about him and just to hear his journey, his story, and what he has coming up. And we are not going to delay any further. We are going to bring up the amazing, legendary Lavelle Crawford. Are you there?
I'm here.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to come on to the podcast to get ready to share some amazing information with the audience. And so we're going to go ahead and we're going to get started. So my first question to you is, how do you change the world via social media?
How do we change the world social media? I mean, being honest with you, I would change the world by getting off social media and getting out and living life, man, myself. But if we was to change in social media, I would think that we would stop being behind masks, you know, and no pun intended, since everybody wearing masks now. I wouldn't be behind a mask of, you know, lies. And just, if you want people to learn something, let the knowledge be for itself. Let you know, come out and be honest. Let the truth lie where it is. And that, you know, because everybody's not going to get it, because there's some people still stuck in the house when you yell fire. So they're not all going to come out the house. So the reality, I think, about social media is, if we could give people the truth, educate, don't lie, and, you know, and also don't give people a pat on the back for the followers. Just give them a pat on the back how they're delivering when they come in front of the audience. It's easy to gain people's ado when they don't have to see you or watch you, but it's harder because that's coming from me, being an entertainer. Coming from me, I think it's you find out how good you are when you can keep an audience enthused in what you're doing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yes I do. You know, I used to do a lot of live streaming, and even when you couldn't see the audience, you could tell when the numbers dropped. So I totally get what you say, when it takes a lot more to keep them turned on and entertained than it is just to post. I do agree with that. So, you know, I think you have a lot of followers with your comedy and all the things that you're doing. So what are some of the things that you have available for them right now?
Well, I got three specials that I shot. The first one that went viral, I mean, I guess it's just people watching it, is Can a Brother Get Some Love? That was the very first one. Mm-hmm. I put all the butter and the sugar and the grits. You know, that one, man, I came hard, so hard, because it was my first one. It was just like, I always believe that you go hard anytime God gives you an opportunity. You know, I guess, you know, from being a little poor chunky kid, you know, I was hungry because we ain't getting that to eat. Mama said, this is all we got. I was going to eat all my food. So any opportunities I get, and I look at opportunities just like, you look at food, man, you come right at it and you enjoy it. Because, you know, your mama give you a piece of candy or you get a piece of cake, you enjoy that damn cake. You don't let nobody have none, you don't share it, you enjoy it and tear it apart. And that's what I did with my comedy. And before I got my special, I did the Shaq All-Star the first time. I would just be like, man, sometimes I felt like I would get looked over, you know, a lot. You know, out here, people say, oh, you're a legend, this and that. And I say, you know, that's cool, that's true. And I don't sit up and try to get hurrahs and pat on the back from everybody, because everybody that they're getting all that love. They don't mean no people really like them anyway. So I think, you know, when I got that Shaq All-Star, and they, you know, everybody was sitting up there nervous. I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, hell, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out here and be funny. I tore that up, and I got a fan base and, you know, got camaraderie with the NBA players. But then I got an opportunity to do my own special. When I got to do my own special, I said I was going to give it everything I got, you know, and I had a manager. And when you're dealing with some people in this entertainment field, and this goes out to young entertainers out here that may not understand, especially Black. Just putting it, making it easy for somebody to understand Black entertainers. When you deal with Hollywood, most of the time you don't get a Jewish, a white agent, who, let alone they looking at your numbers, like y'all talk about social media. Some of these guys see got their followers, and you know they got probably a million followers off of goofy stuff they did. Or some of them may not have that many followers. But the thing about it is, a lot of these agents and people, they don't really know who you are. They don't know who you are. They don't know how talented you are. They don't know how that your fan base may not be on social media, but when you come to see me at the club, you understand that I'm a different entity than some of these other people. I'm basically anomaly, and some people don't even understand that. So, like my manager at the time, like, oh, we're gonna get some people in there. We'll just get some people in there. I said, hell no, this is my hometown. If we do a nice advertisement blast, we can sell this sucker out with no problem. All you gotta do is put it on the radio, show some love. I put money behind me because I believe in them. It sold it out. It was all the fans that know me, all the people that support me, plus family. And I had a great special, and that special wound up being real. You know, people watch it now. I be on Instagram, and I can see people showing that they're watching it and laughing at it now over and over again. And Netflix ain't never gave me a dime for it. But you know what? I made a lot of money because people coming out and see me because I put my foot in. It's just like when you're making that 7-Up cake or you're making some collard greens, you're putting that foot in. And so after that, I had the next special, which is Home for the Holidays, and did that one in St. Louis too. A great special. Had a lot of drama with it because I had to do all the work myself because, you know, I had fired my road manager. I had my wife and my, you know, brother. They helped me out to their capacity, but I had to do a lot of things myself. And like, once again, I had a new agency, and they weren't having the business where they supposed to because they, you know, a lot of times they don't respect you. So I had to go. Luckily, I had a lawyer who was calling me and giving me all the info. I would have never got that done. And we wound up making that happen. Did two shows, great shows, and it wound up being a spectacular special. I did the first major Black person doing a Donald Trump joke, and I called Donald Trump a real N-word. and the people loved it because I said Obama, he was Black, but he didn't act Black, you know. And they play, and people play that so much, and you know, and it's a blessing that I'm known more for my jokes than my name, you know what I'm saying? So, and then I just did my last one, talking because I lost 180 pounds and from weight loss surgery and changing my way of life, and called a new look, same funny. So, and that one was spectacular. Like I said, I just came all out. I wound up doing like 2 hours each show. And so they got some like extended versions on Amazon and everything. So that, you know, that's some of the things I've done. You know, I got, you know, been doing comedy from Last Comic Standing, from Comic View to now, you know.
I'm excited to, when I hear about your journey, it's like, wait a minute, I didn't see that one. I need to go check that one out. I seen the one with when you was talking about the president. Oh my goodness, I just couldn't stop laughing. I know exactly which one you're talking about. So I'm loving the fact that you just never know. I always tell people, laughing is good for the soul. you never know what someone is going through. And so when they could be able to come across one of your jokes or attend one of your, where you're going to be at, you could, you just opening up their airways to be able to, you know, feel what was voided in them at that moment. It was falling down or whatever the case may be. So I'm loving the fact that you always have a variety. It's never a dull moment when we hear your jokes. And then on top of that, I would love for you to be able to share, because sometimes people don't know, you know, how they discover their purpose. How did you discover your purpose in comedy?
I don't even really, when I realized the purpose, I guess that was later on, you know, after you do it for a few years, you start getting fans hitting you up, emailing you with things like, man, Lavelle, you helped me get through some real hard times. And then I was at a few shows. And I mean, I've had grown men coming up to me with tears in their eyes and said that my stand-up helped them not, you know, go to the dark side and kill themselves. You know what I'm saying? And I never, and the thing about it is, honestly, a long time, my mom thought I was going to be a pastor, you know, because, you know, I take my church serious, even though I'm not perfect. I done went down roads that I shouldn't go down. And I ain't your normal, I wouldn't be your normal pastor anyway, because I'm going to get up in your face. I might throw you pastor. And pastor came in and whooped everybody ass. You know, that's kind of pastor that I would probably have been, because I'm just a person that I believe people need to be checked. But I didn't never knew that I was touching people through my comedy until people were coming up to me telling me, man, that like my mom was, like one lady had sent me a letter that her mother was had stage 4 cancer, and she didn't even want to fight. and she said that my special had just came out and they had just got Netflix. And it had been out for a while, but she hadn't seen it. So she played it for her, and she said, when I got to that grocery store, thing, 2 chops to the throat, and she said her mama just laughed, and she hadn't really, couldn't really breathe too much because it was like, it was filtered in her lungs, and I forgot where else it was. I don't know if it was the liver or whatever, but she said that her mama was laughing so hard, the nurse got scared because she was on a ventilator, so they had to take out the ventilator. And she kept laughing. She was saying, I'm fine. I'm just, this boy killing me. And I think that, you know, it always when people give me those testimonies, because I don't know when I'm changing the world, but when God has a plan for you, it ain't nothing you can do about it. And the thing about it, it was so funny because I didn't know I was touching people until people told me that it was changing their world. And I was just like, and just like right now with this whole lockdown thing, it's just like, it's amazing that, I mean, I guess it took me a while before I knew I had a purpose in my comedy. So I think that, you know, it took, I've been doing, like I said, 30 some years. So I think it took about 20 of them for me to realize that.
Wow. I love that story. It must feel really good to give people joy like that. And I know that since you're now live, you know that your purpose is comedy. I hear that you're getting ready to put out a new book and that you're self-publishing it. So tell us about why you decided to go self-publishing route.
Well, you know, I think in the urban area, I think that it's hard. Let me just be real with it. It's like most of your great cooks I'm probably, it ain't in France, they black folk. You know, most black people cook, and I ain't saying that because I'm black. I'm saying that because I am, but then they don't ever get credit for some of the, like cooks, inventors, and everything. But until they step out on faith and put it in their hands, I don't think they'll get the accolades that they're looking for. And I had shared this with my agency and everything. And he was like, yeah, man, I don't know nothing about that, but I could, well, man, this would be great. And they always want to give you that great idea so that they can take credit for the whole thing. And one thing I learned, man, you know, that I had to do is take my career by the hands. I had to take my health by the reins. And I had to take my career by the reins. And then with my wife, like I said, she had a friend who wrote a children's book. And we was trying to figure out how we can do it. My wife said, man, maybe you can do self-publishing. I heard people do that. And she had brought up Vanessa's name. And when we talked to Vanessa, we had Vanessa there. She had wrote like 6,000 books, all these paperback books and all this stuff, and she do it herself, just go on and get it done. And I respected that, you know, because, you know, sometimes you gotta, it's when you broke, when I see a homeless man sitting out on the street asking me for change, but it was 50 cent laying on the ground. If you don't take that time to look down and help yourself, why you want somebody else to help you? And why you expect people to do it the way you want them to do it? You tell them you want a sandwich, you come back and you tell them you're allergic to pickles. They didn't put pickles and pickle onions, pickle everything on it. You can't even eat the sandwich, and you know, and they giving it to you. So you gotta pick all that off. You still hungry because you're allergic to pickles, you know? So I just think that when she told me that I could do it that way, self-published, I said, man, let me start gravitating towards all being self-reliant. And so that's where I start. That's where I was. I know I'm long-winded, but I had to explain the way I, you know how.
You know, when I received that call, I was like, wait a minute, hold on, what? No, this can't be right. You're joking, right? And I was like honored, shocked, and sometimes I still like, wow. And I say this is because a couple of years ago I was in a dark place after losing my job, and when I was coming out of that dark place, I would watch comedy, and I came across one of your you was on, oh my goodness, was it Steve Harvey? I can't think of what was his thing, where you and another comedian were going back and forth, and I laughed so hard. It was like, my goodness. And I will watch it over and over again, never thinking anything, but sometimes you can manifest some things. And right. I just was like, wow. So when the call came, I said, wait a minute, hold on. Really? But then something that I told your wife that I never thought about, but when you came to Chicago, and we met up, and my daughter, she cooked for you guys. I was like in like a state of mind where I was like, this is real, right? Because a lot of people didn't know that same building that you had your show in is the same building that laid me off in 2011. And so God will make things full circle, and we just really don't even realize it. We just have to trust the process. And when you say taking ownership of your own stuff, I took ownership, because when I spoke with various publishing companies, it was like, wait a minute, if I sign this paper, you telling me I don't own the rights to it? And I was like, man, this is crazy, because I have this book and now I have the opportunity to put it out there, but then I won't own the rights to my book. And so I kept pushing it, like, I know there's a way where I can get this book out. I just didn't know if it's possible or if it was worth it. And being obedient to just still push forward and building a team to be able to get this book self-published so you can own the rights to your own stuff is exactly what I keep stressing to people. And then for you to be able to trust me in your book is just like, wow. And I'm honored, I'm humble, I'm grateful, and I'm thankful that you could have like, no, heck no. But you gave a person, a Vanessa Canterbury, a chance. I'm just grateful for that. And then for you to know that taking the ownership of your stuff is so powerful in itself, because you own it. And your book, as I'm going through the book, I'm just like, this is some good stuff. And I know it's going to be a bestseller. I know it's going to be in the people's hands. And people need to read your book and attend the next that you have, which is the seminars that's going to come to follow. So I just wanted to take that moment out to just be able to, you know, share that with you, because sometimes people just don't know. And you need to know that what you're doing is you giving back, you giving people opportunities, you know, you sharing your journey and giving people hope again. And they just knowing that it's possible, because some people, they just don't even think that it's possible. And you just like, look, it is possible. And you're doing it. And now you're going a self-publishing route. I can't wait till your book come out. I can't wait till this book come out, because it's going to be something bigger than what people ever thought. So I do want to just say thank you for that. My question to you, with the book, what can people expect from your book that's coming out, that you have taken the ownership of to self-publish?
Well, first of all, you're welcome. And I thank my wife, because she, you know, she, y'all stay in touch. And, you know, I mean, and we, and me, I'm a taskmaster. I don't always give people a chance. You know, I like giving people a chance, but I'd be afraid, because a lot of times it's just like, I said, let me go to the black mechanic and let him fix the car, you know, and then he turn around and, you know, and then I got to go to the white mechanic because he ain't put all the damn bolts and nuts on the damn thing. So I'm impressed that a lot of things that, you know, black women and black men out here are finding ways to control their worth and express their worth and get what they're worth. And so, you know, you're very welcome, like your daughter cooking and stepping up to the plate and making a delicious meal. And, you know, I like that. That cabin is real good. So, you know.
And what do you call it? The other one was cake. What is, give me some of that cake.
Yeah. What was that? It was cornbread. Was it
cornbread?
Yeah, it was good. It was sweet and delicious, but I was eating that cake up. So, yeah. But on the other side of that, God directs your path, you know. And the thing about what you, that job laid you off. And I tell people, I got fired from my job. I said, well, you know, it was coming. It just that, you know, at least you got it over with. It's a sad thing that they fire you when you just started, you know, making plans on your job. If they fire you, they always tell people it's just like rocket fuel. It's just shooting you and propelling you into something a lot better. That's all it does. You know, I've been shafted in so many ways, man. But you know, in God's glory, I've came out of it without a blemish or a scar, you know. And if it is a scar, you never know where it is. But what we can expect from this book is, it's called the Comedy School Guide, a stand-up, and I don't like to write to be self-absorbed, because it ain't about me. It's just like I said, I had a lot of comedians come at me, hey man, can you give me a little tips? Can you give me, can you give me some advice? And hit me up online. I'm a young comic coming up. Then I have, you know, I have comics that on the road with me sometimes that actually need a little bit of advice. And then the thing about it is, I think comedy school, it could be, they want it to be funny, which I'm gonna make it funny, but I think the funny that I come with is real, because it's just almost like when the ideal I had is just like what P. Diddy had with his show with the young rappers and singers. What was that show? I can't think of that show.
It was a Bad Boy. No, it was a Bad Boy for Life. Making a band.
Exactly. And the thing about it is like, I'm like I'm writing this book, you know, because I had to tell people exactly who I was. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people, there's gangs of people in this world know who I am, but there's people that don't know who I am. And I know, and I haven't seen, and I done made jokes about some of my friends who haven't even got themselves together and had a nerve to be having comedy school. And they making a living at it. But and I just say, man, I just didn't want to lead people astray just to make a buck. But when I seen where comedy was going, and I mean, it's not going anywhere, but I think that the scary part of comedy is people losing the idea of what real comedy is. I mean, because when I watch Richard Pryor's, and in every way, everything is different, but the main thing about being an athlete, you got to work out. You can't work out on a safe place. You got to go out there in the streets. You got to go running through the hills. You got to get out there and, you know, I play football. You got to go hard against better people to make you better. And I mean, you just, and these guys becoming famous off of these, you know, their followers on Instagram, and they on the same show as me. And I'm just like, man, it's almost like, it's damn near like a slap in the face, especially for urban comics, because they, you know, it's almost like they throw us out there. They want to oversaturate us to our own. Keep pushing us, the same people, put same cities all the time to the point where, you know, they make you not be good. You know, you can't. Unless you find a way in. Like, they only allow, people don't believe this. They tell, no, that ain't true. That ain't true. When I said this on Black TV, I said, they only allow one Black comedian at a time to make it. And they'll, you know, but you to make it into this rock star status like Eddie Murphy, even like Dave Chappelle, they only had one. There's so many funny people out here. You only see one at a time. But that ain't where I'm trying to get people to be in my book. My book is to just establish and learn, teach you how to hone your craft. Like I said, these internet comedians, some of them are regular comics like Ryan Davis. You got, you know, Carlos Miller, you know, Clayton Thomas. I know them as comics. You know, I don't know Carlos that well, but I know Clayton, and I know I've seen Ryan Davis working in clubs and stuff, and there's a few more. But then you got some, you know, that's still young. They knew it, like DC Young Fly. He handling his business though. He coming up with material, and he ain't half-assing with it. But I watch some of them, man. They get up there and they put them people in some. You know, Country Wayne do a decent, you know, but I see them sometimes they be up there and they be eating. And then some of them stealing jokes from comics that haven't made it, but they made it, but you know, they got washed away when Comic View went off the air. So what I wanted to do was give them the ideas that how me being a comic and how people wonder how I, you know, achieved, and we always come up with fresh material and understanding. You want it, like, you always want to be a comic, you want to be a stand-up, get your ass on stage. That's one of the topics I talk about. And I look at, I mean, comedy will always, can always pay your bills. because even though when this stuff comes back, you know, you can make a living doing smaller venues, and smaller crowd. Because people are always gonna like the laugh. You got corporate companies that want a comedian to come in and shake them up before they tell them they about to have budget cuts. I mean, it's all kind of ways comics can make a living at it. But first you have to, you know, realize that this is a craft. You just can't get up there. Hey, everybody think I'm funny. I think I can do this. Oh, I get up. Oh, I'm funny. And some of these guys out here now, like, yeah, that's what your mama tell you. But you don't understand. The day you might have saw that comic and he wasn't funny was a bad day for him. But I bet you he's still handling. I bet you see him again. He said, ain't the same guy I saw over here. Because they have to understand, you know, and that what I give them in this first book is the mechanics. You know, I tell them, find you places to get on stage, show, give them ideas how to get some stage time. Because the main thing is that you got to understand about comedy, you got to start living and you got to go out, hang out. And it's not a married man's game, really. So, when I did it, I was glad I did it when I was young. You know, where I could go out, sit at Denny's, writing jokes, hanging out, going up at some nightclub or some talent show. And that's what I put in this book. I said, there's so many ways of getting stage time. There's so many ways to find your way, but find the stage presence. You got to become fearless on stage. You got to always find a way to write or your jokes. And that's what I mean, in this book, I give the blueprint to being a stand-up comedy, but I said, give a disclaimer. You may just don't have it. You can do all these techniques and may not have it. Maybe you're a diamond in the rough. It takes you a while to evolve, you know. And trust me, I've got booed on stage. I thought I was funny, but I wasn't that night or some other night, but the guy knew I loved it, and he knew I wanted it, and I wanted it bad enough where I went and got it. I went up on stage, and I went up into a tough audience, because tough audience is amazing because they make you strong. It's like going up against the meanest boss or the hardest stain on some pants or you walking up a big old hill with slippery shoes on, but you make it up that damn hill. You tired as hell. But once you get up that hill, you go down the downside. I mean, you get an easy audience. I mean, you're destroying them. Like, I get cakewalks now, you know, because where I came from with my comedy and how hard I was on myself, I made that muscle strong. So what I deal in this book is from the stage present, the point of view, I break down how to get in good with the club managers. I show them how to figure out how to work on their timing. Timing is very important. Finding shock value, finding your way of comedy, because everybody, you can't be like Richard Pryor. You can't be like Eddie Murphy. You gotta be like you. You gotta be, and then some people don't even know sometimes how funny they are when they're trying to be funny. And I said, won't you stop trying to be funny? And that's what I tell, and I wrote in that book too, is like, I always like to be around people who just funny in conversation. They weren't even trying to be funny, but your ass was laughing. And he wasn't trying to be funny. Like, I got uncles, got rid of his soul. That was funny as hell, and they were just telling the story. They weren't trying to be funny, but you got to laugh about it right on. But I wasn't trying to be funny, but that would make great comedy. Like Richard Pryor, if you ever watch Richard Pryor on stage talking about him having to go to jail for pulling a gun out on his wife, going through art or being a drug addict. George Carlin talking about how silly people are, how we think. Some of this stuff is so relevant today, is amazing to me. You know, just being an icon to a point of, you know, and so that's where I try to get people to understand. You don't become legendary because you're doing arenas, and I'm doing baseball stadiums full of people. Because that only comes a lifetime. You become legendary when anytime you're in front of an audience, you got something to talk about, and it's funny. That's why Dave Chappelle is who he is, because Dave Chappelle he ain't reinventing the wheel. He ain't doing nothing that incredible. But the way he sets his stuff up is genius. It's not that he's so better than somebody else. It's just that he talks. And I mean, some of his stuff is just basic dirty jokes, but the way he says them makes it really funny. The same way I like a Bill Burr or someone like that. So that's what I give people. I give people my whole view of why, what I think is comedy and the elements. And I give them the breakdowns, and I tell them how they pertain to me. Like Vanessa asked me, right? Because I didn't want to make it about me and make it my life story yet. Because like I said, my life story is not finished. So what I gave him is just, this is just a drop. And then I want to come up with volume. What I want to do is do seminars. And I want volume two is to turn the comedy game into a business and show them how you ain't going to be making real money yet. You got to just start understanding your money will be the payoff is getting that stage time and getting that work in. You're not going to be the Kevin Hart and all that stuff. You got to earn it. You just got to figure it out. And then I write, you know, because the next one's going to be, don't always be an opening act. Get on show with people, but find out how you can make it to the top where you feature an act, and you're a feature act, and basically on comedy stages, you have an opening act, which is your MC, and you got your feature act, who goes up and does 30 minutes while the headliner chills, and then the headliner be me or whoever, you go up and do 45 minutes. But I tell people all the time, don't stay in that feature or that MC position the rest of your life. That's just like working at the grocery store, being a backer or a stocker the rest of your life. You want to be the cashier. You want to have the cash. You want to be the manager. You want to own the store. That's your goal. That should always be your goal. It's the pinnacle. So that's where the comedy guide in this book right now is just the basics. The basics, just getting your ass on stage, and don't go on stage because you think. And I tell them the reasons why to do comedy and what reasons why not to do comedy. And a lot of the reasons to do comedy because it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to feel that power harnessed in your hand. You got this mic, and these people are enjoying you. But it's also the reason not to do comedy is that you think you can do this. Because somebody else told you could do it and you can't. You know, so, and I mean, you know, but I'm not going to say that you can't. I want to watch you see if you fly. I want you to fly. I want to see you crash. I want to see you fly. But that's where this book come into thing. It's just for the novice, and it's got the ones that want to turn it into a career, and it got those that's in that position. But they don't know how to even get past that position they in. So that's in the techniques I give, and I will give more in my seminars when people give me the Q&A. But right now, the book is just a guideline. The main thing is you have to get on stage to really understand what I'm talking about.
Wow, that was amazing. I know many, many, many comics are going to go and snatch that book right off the shelves. But of course, that's what we want them to do, right? Right. But you know, you were mentioning the seminars. So tell us, is that going to be something that they can ask you questions, or is it something that you're just going to teach to them? Or is it something where you're gonna put them in the hot seat and let them do some comedy in front of you? Oh, tell us about those.
Well, I basically, my seminars is what I hope that I know that I'm gonna do. Like when I do comedy clubs, like on Sundays, nearly like the one show. Unless if it's sold out, we might add a couple shows. But you know that you know basically I'm gonna have that where I'm gonna give them, you know, maybe an hour of my time. If you bought the book and you paid for the seminar, and you can come in and give me a Q&A. And of course, you know, at the end of it, I'm gonna probably have a camera set up, and I'm gonna have everybody, you know, just give me their best 2 minutes. And what I'm gonna do, maybe even I'll do a Zoom meeting for those people that I had in Cleveland, say in Cleveland, and I play their tapes, and I'll give them the best critiques I can give them at that moment. And the thing about it, after I do this, you know, like I, you know, always let them know I won't take their numbers down. And then, cause when I come to see, I'm gonna do a best of Cleveland, best of Kentucky, along with myself. These three people are the best comics that I see in your town, and they're gonna be my feature opening acts at that time to give them pub. And then hopefully, I change this into, you know, the comedy school, and there'll be some of my people that I will have already set when I do the Netflix TV show. So, you know, so basically it'll be all Q&A, yes, most definitely. I'm gonna let people pick my brain and ask me questions. And I, you know, and you see, I got a gift for gab. I could talk your ass till your car run out of gas. You know, I could talk all day. So, you know, but I'm gonna keep it brief, and it's not about me. Is people want to ask the questions that concern it. And some of them, hopefully I'll have it where they can email me their questions so that we can move through real quick, you know, because I'm hopefully have it online as well. Like Vanessa was saying, that would be good to have it online at the same time. And, but I want always, it's going to be just an hour, you know, because it ain't going to be, the people ask you all kinds, so what they do, you know, so, but I will keep it brief, but my seminar will be just to give them a question, and then, you know, what I would do is they can email me, and every once in a while, like I said, we'll have a brush up seminars online. I think that would be perfect. Have a brush and have people just send me their tapes, and I, you know, send me just like a 3 minute of their set, and I can give them what I can off of it. But the main thing is just even going up on the stage with me is not gonna help them. What I probably would do is, you know, maybe even give, if it's just a few people that come to the seminar, I might just give them all, you know, 5 minutes that night on the stage. You know, I pick three, you know, and give them 5 minutes that night, or have somebody watching it for me as I dip out. and we'll have them go up, because I have people all the time asking, hey man, can I get some time? Can I get some time in your city? And see, and the thing about it is, you know, now you're gonna have to earn it. You know, because I had a guy in Virginia. It was so funny. He asked me, man, please, man, I'm a rocket. This boy was late. He was late to do the show. He said, can I still go up? I said, hell no, Negro. You wasn't supposed to be here in the first place. Is this your attitude about being in this game? This game don't love you. If I was a club owner, what would you tell the club owner? And he was so demolished about it. How it came at it, but I said, man, I said, I don't know. I be trying to figure out with my black young people how they don't understand how hard this world is. Because I mean, how hard we go through it all the time. I guess they got it better than I did, because my mama said, you ain't want what we cook, you ain't gonna get shit to eat. You don't like them clothes? Well, you gonna wear them every day, you know. You know, yeah. I don't wanna walk to school. Well, you can run to school, cause there ain't no buses coming. I mean, but nowadays these guys live in a fantasy land. Like shit is handed to them. You know what I'm saying? Cause I know all of them ain't rich, and that's I'm talking to the wrong people. But yeah. You know, that's where what I'm providing, you know. because my work ethic is totally different than other people. If you talk to Beyonce and ask Beyonce, how can I be a megastar like you, Miss Beyonce? You'll probably die from her story and her work ethic. Just her telling you would kill you.
Yep, that's true. Very true. We're going to make it happen with your what we talked about earlier for your course. I think that's going to be absolutely an amazing extension to what you do. So you could be able to pour into more people. And I love the fact that you are not giving passes and just, you know, okay, yeah, go ahead. No, you have to do the groundwork, you know.
It's just like you doing your self-publishing. The thing about it is, like, you're not, you know, like when I gave you the book, you know, I respected that you said, oh, you gave your interment of like, man, they want, you know, your life is a guideline for other people. And I said, I'm sure it is, you know, but that's why I went on. I said, yeah, she might be right. Let me throw that extra meat on chapter 8 and give them how I experienced this. And the thing about it is volume 3 is going to probably be a little more about, you know, where I'm at with it. But I just, you know, this kind of game is just, it's down there a, you know, it's my lifeblood, you know. It didn't take care of, you know, with God. God blessed me into a position where this thing took care of a lot of things, and I just, you know, I'm happy that I met a lot of people, did a lot of things. It's been a magnificent ride. Yeah, I met my wife doing stand up, so you know, it changed my life in so many ways. Mm-hmm. So I think this could help a lot of people. So,
oh yeah, it will help definitely a lot of people, because when I met your wife, she had me laughing from the time that we met coming in the door. I said, oh my goodness, yes, 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 I'm loving her. She is so sweet. She is a sweetheart.
Yeah.
My question to about the Unscripted podcast I'm hearing about. What's going on with that? So people could be able to find you on a podcast, on an Unscripted podcast.
Well, since I found Anchor, man, you know, I mean, I'm gonna do a couple of them, but the unscripted is just perfect for it, because it's like, you know, I could talk about a bunch of things that I enjoy doing. Yeah. It's things that I like to do that are maybe interesting in people. Like this comedy game I love, I talk about several different things, from health aspects to my ideas about church and religion, and I got a buddy of mine I want to talk to tomorrow, you know, to talk about faith, because I right now, you know, me and talking about Unscripted, and that's why I think people, when you have banter where you talk about everything on your mind, it's just that, like, he go to church and everything, and I just want to talk to him about faith, because right now I think that a lot of people's faith are being tried, and a lot of people's faith has been, you know, I'm not one to judge, but I think it's been faltered. And I got to watch Moses, the movie Moses, not even the Ten Commandments, just the story of Moses. And I thought, I can understand why nobody would want to be a leader now to try to guide our people out of things. I said, and I think that books and just the podcast will help give people some insight on their mind, like, because you're only going to touch one person at a time. Even if you save everybody, like Superman saved everybody on the bus, but only one person on the bus say, thank you, Superman. So it's almost like you can't You can't say everybody, but I just wanted to talk about faith tomorrow because I just wanted to say, man, they let churches close down and pastors didn't even try to fight it. But then I was so proud of my pastor down here because I didn't know that he took it through the courts to get his church back open. And I said, I don't understand, man. This is one of the worst things I think I ever experienced in my life. They talk about 9/11. I said, 9/11 was crazy. But this, when the whole world shut down, this is some BS. And like every day they change the rules. And it's hard for me to keep my mouth shut because I walk in stores, stay behind this line. Oh, it's only one person at a time in the store. And I'm, you know, so I want to talk to my faith. And so unscripted, I also talk about fishing because I buy a lot of experimental baits that I use. I use a lot of bait. Like today I had a bait that I used from this place called Chase Bait, and they wanted me to give a review. And I got my YouTube channel I'm building up now. And so my unscripted, I found out this unscripted, this app, in which I know about. Yeah, I told you, y'all knew about it. I didn't know about it. With podcasts like you ladies got yours up and y'all got this thing going good. I didn't know a damn thing about Zoom or nothing. But y'all got Zoom up. My son, we tried to do Zoom today for his school. And I guess his teacher forgot she had a meeting set up. So we were sitting there looking for this thing to work, but y'all got this thing popping. So when I seen Anchor and they say they can publish on your website, they can publish it everywhere, all the stuff, I was just like, well, damn. Finally, iPhone that came out with something that can help me. I only like two apps on there. They got a fishing app and this app. And so now I'm able to do this unscripted. And unscripted gonna be fun because you're gonna get to hear LaBelle acting crazy and just talking. Because I always wanted my own radio show. I did Tom Joyner for a year. But I hated corporate radio. I hated corporate radio. Because corporate radio, you always nitpick. And I think podcasts, what makes it so beautiful is that you find your audience. You don't let them find your audience. You find your audience. People out there that's thinking linear, thinking past, you know, past what? Oh, it's okay. I could critique Donald Trump, I could treat President Obama. But on the radio, he ain't saying nothing about Obama. I say, hey man, everybody made some mistakes. And it's just this keep it real. But I guess I just have to, you know, do it on my podcast because if I want to check, I can't do it on the radio. So I'm excited about the mail and script because my buddy always said, man, you say stuff out of your mouth that I can't believe it came out of your mouth. And you say things that, you know, ain't nobody ever said. So I say it on my podcast and have fun with it, you know. And the thing about it is I never do nothing derogatory or nothing that harm anybody or even spite, you know, slight anybody because that ain't my job. I love everybody and I think everybody is wonderful. I think people make this world fantastic. But sometimes we should have fun with it, you know. I like to see people that, you know, I always respect weird people, people who have bald headed on top but got a long mane of hair at the back of their neck. That I always like people that go to other levels, you know. You know, I mean, you know, just do things that your brother wearing watermelon shoes and a watermelon suit, got a watermelon hat, and then you be like, man, what's them black stuff on them shoes? He said, brother, them seeds, player, you know. I love people to think outside the box. I love things like that. So unscripted is for those people who, you know, can come on there. You know, I hopefully have comedians. And I want to give some fun people on my podcast. Just talking, you know, just bringing their world to the world, you know. Bringing their world to life but under their permission. You know what I'm saying? So that's what unscripted is.
Wow, I can't wait to subscribe and hear some of these wonderful episodes.
Yeah, I only got one update now, but I'm gonna publish thing in my interviews I have with other people because a lot of times, you know, I know that you put my name up on, I've done a lot of podcasts And, you know, a lot of them get lost in the wayside, but if I bring them and put them on my podcast, then people can hear me on other people's stuff and be like, man, I didn't know he did it. That was funny. And I probably just do the, you know, the highlights mm-hmm. of me on other podcasts. And, you know what I mean? People like hear me, you know, BS around, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, while we're talking about this, the Unscripted Podcast and the seminars and the books, you know, where can people find you and your social media handles, your websites, things like that, so that they can keep up with the new things that's coming out? Because they don't want to miss out on the book launch. They don't want to miss out on the seminar launch. You know, they don't want to miss out on a podcast episode. So how do they find your stuff?
Well, I have a website called ComedianLavelleCrawford.com. That's Comedian, C-O-M-E-D-I-A-N. My name, Lavelle, L-A-V-E-L-L, Crawford, C-R-A-W-F-O-R-D.com. You can also, I got my Gmail up. You can still ComedianLavelleCrawford@gmail.com. I'm on Instagram, Lavelle the Comic, T-H-A, that's the Comic, L-A-V-E-L-L. T-H-A-C-O-M-I-C, the Comic on Instagram. And it's on, and I'm on Twitter too. It's still Lavelle. It's Lavelle's, L-A-V-E-L-L-S-T-H-A-C-O-M-I-C on Twitter. And then I'm on Facebook under LavelleCrawford.com. And I think it's under, yeah, it's LavelleCrawford.com. And pretty much you can catch me in the streets, you know, but my book should be on. My book should be on Amazon and hopefully at Barnes and Noble's. Hopefully it's gonna be all on every. And I'm gonna do. I might even do a recording of it too. I think that might be cool, just me reading the book for those people, comedians that might be sight impaired, because I kind of can relate to them because. That took me a hold up on this book because I really, you know, that's another thing I talk about on my Unscripted Podcast is you gotta take care of your health, man. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, and then think about it is, it's like I've turned 51, Lord willing, I see 52 and many more. And, but even it ain't the age, it's, you know, I changed my whole route of health. You know, I was, you know, always a large person, you know, I got down around the, you know, right at the twos. It's the big twos, but it's still twos, you know, but it's a blessing to get down there because I was at 5 to 50 pounds. And I never made it a big deal because I handled my business. I moved stealthily like a cat. I can move. I was good on my toes. I was always quick on my feet. I never handicapped myself as a big guy. I always dressed nice, felt positive, got a beautiful wife. I never, you know, just, you know, settle for less because of this. Even if I had reservations about myself, my self-esteem was always there. Like I had people there when I lost the weight, because I had weight loss surgery, I had a gastric sleeve. And I had thought about that several times, but I was scared because I heard people had passed away from it. And I said, I ain't trying to die to lose weight. I'd rather die eating a pork chop than die from, you know, trying to lose weight. That's bullshit. But my baby sister had the surgery. And she was, you know, I admit she was my inspiration. And we was always, you know, she wasn't hardly big as I was, but she was always a thick girl. And she just, when she thought they said she was gonna might have diabetes, high blood pressure, she just nipped it in the bud and said, man, screw that. And she just started doing an active, healthy life. And me, I was always active as a big guy. I played sports, I boxed. I played football, I wrestled in high school. And then my wife, you know, she talked about people doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Yeah, I wrestle, and it's kind of like wrestling. It's long, you can make people tap out and stuff. So I was doing jiu-jitsu and everything, you know, and I loved it. But then, you know, I had a moment where, you know, but in the midst of being a big guy, you know, you can do all these things, but if your diet ain't right, you're doing, your caloric intake is more than your outtake, and I got diabetes, and it was all weight related. Because as soon as I lost all the weight, my blood sugar got regular and everything, and then you know my blood pressure came down and got good and everything. But I went through a little bit of adversity, and been through a lot of stuff in my life. But when you become a husband and a father, man, you fight every day. It's just like right now with this whole lockdown, it's just like being a black man and standing up for your family. It's like, I know white men and everybody, because I know it's white fathers out there. And some men still working, but there's some, you know, white guys, white counters out there looking like, damn, man, I got to take care of my family, man. They say this stuff going to be over in a month, and just keep going. And comedians, you know, we can get paid every week, maybe even three times a week if we hustle, and then we keep our family a lifestyle. We were in the midst of buying a house. Everything was working out. I was getting everything done. And then I think, trials and tribulations with the IRS. So I was calling them personally, talking to them. And then they were working. And when I found out, that's another thing about being self-reliant. When I started doing things myself, I found out they weren't as horrifying as people thought they was. You know, when you start talking to people, you start, you know, because when you go and pull the curtain back, you reveal that the wizard, a little old man, is scary, and he had you scared, and he's a punk. And you up here was afraid of the unknown. If you step out on faith, you understand that everything is all right. But I was, you know, when you letting people do things and they calling you and telling you this, and all is almost done, and you think it's done, and then they had to do this. And we wind up, Luke didn't get the house that we was expecting to get. Long story short. But in the midst of it, man, I was stressed because I wanted to put my wife them in the house for Christmas and Thanksgiving. I wanted us to be celebrating in our house. And I just knew that, you know, God would never bring this far to leave. And the thing about it, he didn't. But, you know, when you sit up here, and if God don't want you to have it, just like you were talking about, Vanessa, about when you lost that job, God showed you that you didn't need that job. That job is a job. But then, you know, just like that house probably wasn't the one for us. It was probably a lot of more issues. It wasn't in a gated community that we probably needed to be in. Things that we didn't, that. And then when they come at you, they want to come at me and break me down, thinking I didn't have my my rib, which was my wife. And you know, but before that, I was traveling, I was depressed. We had to stay in this place that I didn't want to be in. But in the midst of it, I didn't even know I was going to jiu-jitsu and fighting and rolling in class, and we got hit in the face. And my sight started getting blurry. I noticed it get blurry, but it didn't get better. And I didn't know what it was. Next thing you know, I go home to St. Louis, and I ate wrong at the house after doing these shows, traveling around, not getting no proper rest. And I noticed that I could not see. And my wife went home early, like a day early. Me and my mom and my sister, we out at the restaurant, and I was just telling her, I said, damn, man, I don't know what's going on, but I, you know, for some reason, I can't read the signs on the highway or nothing, you know. And it was just like, and it seemed like something was in my eye and I couldn't get out. So I go to Pearl Vision Center up at the mall just to get a, you know, checkup, because I was wary. And the bad thing was my right eye, I thought always was bad. I know this is a long story, I'm sorry, but my right eye, I thought was always bad. It was trying to be the dominant eye. And I couldn't, that eye was not helping me see, because it had everything kind of a little distorted. So in the midst, what happened was, I was, my blood sugar kept getting high up and down, and then it busted a blood vessel in my eye, and I had blood in the back of my retina. That's what she told me. So I had to get surgery so that I can get that blood removed out of my eye, you know, because my vision would go in and out because it would go over that eye, and I couldn't see. But this eye wasn't helping me see over here, so I had to get eye surgery. That held up the book, finish it writing the book. And then in the midst of this lockdown, the doctor said, you might as well get this eye fixed. So I got this eye fixed, but this eye started getting stronger and stronger. And you know, but I realized how blessed it is to have your eyes. And then I realized that diabetes can do a hell of a thing, because my right eye, the cornea, had split. Where I could, that's why I wasn't being able to see totally out of the eye. I thought it was old age, and it was because my cornea was split. And I would have never knew. And if I wouldn't have got that checked out a long time, it probably would have saved his eye, because I would have cut out everything, all the sweets and shit. I've been drinking water and all this stuff. But, you know, you live and learn. If you learn to listen to God, you'd be better. So that's where it held up on this book. So that's why I might do a reading over this book too for blind comics, you know, who guys who are blind who may need to get this information too, even though we might can do it in Braille. But talking about it might help them read it, will help them out too. So
that's a great idea, you know, because they have all kinds of different things now, you know. Kindle has a thing that'll read the book for you. You can also put it on Alexa. So that's a good idea for you to have, or even have an audio book. So that would be an amazing idea. You know, I just personally want to thank you so much for being on here, and also for, you know, believing in my co-host, Vanessa. She's a fabulous individual, and I know that she's going to take great care of you. And anytime that I see someone of your caliber that, you know, just appreciates my friend like you do, I just have to say thank you.
Oh, man, you know, it's good. It's an honor to be around. You know, I don't want to sound bias or racist when I say, but I'm pro-black, and I think that in the, you know, in our era with black people, man, we go ahead and then we fall back a lot of time. But sometimes, man, you just gotta believe in people, man. And I thank Miss Vanessa for, you know, coming on. And, I mean, because she gave us a lot of insight. And the thing about it is, like, I learned from her through my white friend. And I learned about her through my wife's friend, and then we learned from her. And then it just gave me a push to start doing this. Cause I mean, I want to write. I got great ideas for scripts. I write them, and I don't go out to finish them because I get to working on this and that. But I sometimes don't like doing things, but being a self-published person, you get it done, and you get it done for yourself, and you believe it, and then you give it to the people. It's like, you know, you want to be a chef, but, you know, you can't get in a restaurant. You know, people can come and eat my food in my restaurant. So I think that she taught me a lot, and it's great to be a part of people doing it themselves. You know, it's an honor, like your podcast and everything. It's just exciting that, you know, because they don't like self-motivated people. The world don't like it. I'm just telling you right now.
And it's so true. That is so true. You get a lot of kickback from it. And then when you turn around and do it anyway, they look at you like, wait a minute, what? Because when I first put out a couple of my books, the same publishing companies that I had reached out to, you just never know who's following you. They were the same ones reaching back out to me. It's like, wait a minute, how did you do that? How did you do it? I just did it anyway. You know, sometimes you just gotta, again, I love when you talked about the faith. We just have to have that faith to be able to move forward and do what see what's impossible, but understand that I'm possible.
Man, the faith is a powerful, you know, a powerful part of everything we're in. Because, I mean, being a stand-up comedian, you are self-reliant, because if you don't believe yourself, because your family can support you, but people don't even understand. You on that stage by yourself. And once you start realizing that it's all up to you, it just makes you a very formidable person in anything you do, because you're gonna take care of yourself. You're gonna make sure self is fed, self is protected, self getting some rest. Even sometimes yourself might have to go see for yourself. You're gonna make sure that you're handling things yourself, because if you wait on people to do something, man, this shit will never get done. It won't get done the way you want it though. And that in this world is so strange. It's more people out here that want you to be dependent on them instead of you be dependent on yourself and God above. Because God give you every tool that you need. Mm-hmm. People think that you need, I need the building to have a business. I need a car to own a car. No, you don't. Uber take your ass everywhere you want to now. They got cars drive their own self. Shit, you don't have to even worry about the accident. You can get out. That car was driving itself. You know, I wasn't in that accident. That car was doing its own thing. I told him to make a left. But the world out here always want people to be dependent on, because they think that it's like auto mechanic. Like, I put a battery in my motorcycle the other day. I changed my battery in my motorcycle. I ain't never had a motorcycle. I ain't never known to do repairs, but I looked in that sucker and realized, hey, I can put a battery in here. This ain't nothing. You can learn stuff on YouTube till they cut it off. Mm-hmm. And the thing about it, being self-reliant in everything you do, is one of the most powerful things you can ever do, because God is in you and he wants you to come to him with everything. And that's why I always thank God way before he even blessed it. I mean, I ain't saying way before God, because 2 seconds to God is like not even a blink to him. So, you know, two million years, you think you like, Lord, why did it take so long? But if you thank him right away, like, thank you, Lord, for giving me this money. And you ain't even got the money yet. Thank you, Lord, for just, you know, waking me up tomorrow. You ain't even woke up tomorrow, but you thank him in advance, because he already gonna do it. And you should thank him in advance every moment you get, because if you thank him, it seems like things come that much faster to you. It just seems like his blessings flow that way, because he already done died for you. He already did all that. Everything you got, he was in the future as he in the past, listening to you. Asked about everything, just like I want to do this podcast. God said, I'm making it. I got the app for you. Thank you, Lord, for the app. Thank you, Lord, for the book. Thank you for being the bestseller, you know. And that's the thing, how he does things. And if we learn how to have that faith and pray in that aspect of past tense, like it's already done, I mean, That's what I've been saying. Thank you, Lord, this quarantine is over. Thank you, Lord, this lockdown is over. If everybody start praying like that, this stuff will be done. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lord, for all this crap, all the corona gone. So I think that it's a great thing. Ladies, y'all doing a great thing. Y'all doing a wonderful thing, and y'all keep on pushing. My podcast gonna give y'all something to reckon with. I'm coming for you.
Well, we thank you so much. It's been such an honor to be able to get you on a podcast, share what you're working on, and that, you know, the book is coming up. Come on, it's going to be here less than, 4 to 6 weeks, the book will drop. So that's going to be exciting and so much more to come. So I thank you so, so much for the opportunity. And it's just been an honor. It's been absolutely an honor.
Thank you both, ladies. I really appreciate Ms. Vanessa. What's your name again, sister, so I won't say it wrong?
This is Ikeena Finch, yes.
Dikina?
Ikina.
Ikina, okay, Ikina, okay. Ikina, thank you very much. Thank you both of y'all so much for having me on your show. We can do this again when the next volume is come out. Anything else that we are putting together, just want me to come on there to talk. And it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a blessing. It's such a blessing. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to this podcast. Please go out and follow Lavelle Crawford on all his social media handles. Check out his website. Don't forget to get on that podcast and get in them seminars as soon as you see them, because as you could tell from this podcast, he is greatness when it comes to comedy. So with that being said, everyone, good night.
Good night.